welcome to the next episode of the Beach Court Podcast. Today, it's all about Vancouver. We're recapping the Vancouver Regional Championships, where Andrew Hedrick took it down with Dragapult Dusk Noor. We're going to be diving into all the success there. And also, we're going to take a little more time to like review the day one and day two conversion, how things changed from EYC. But then also highlight some of the top plays from top eight, even though the format's on its last legs before rotation. Still some very high-level plays going on throughout stream all weekend. In addition to that, we'll be having our trivia segment where Eric will once again be trying to stump Parker and I with a rude, honestly, most of the time trivia question, rude and uncalled for. No, they're just a little tough, but we'll get them this time. And then we're going to wrap things up with Crispin's Corner, highlighting some of the spiciest lists from the Vancouver Regional Championships, as well as let you know about the upcoming pre-release promos for pre-release happening this weekend. But for now, we're going to pass it back over to the boys. My name is Maddox Porkin, hosting today while Eric is sleeping from his red eye from Vancouver. But he is actually sleepwalking and present with us, and also joined, as always, by Parker Greenwald. Eric Parker, how are we all doing?
Doing good. I don't know. Just good.
Just good. Just hey, good. Nothing wrong with that. Just Eric, good, bro. How much have you slept in the past 48 hours?
Well, you see, I was at the casino Friday night. I'm sorry, Saturday night after not doing well. So I was there till 4 a.m.
Yes, sir.
Checkout was at 10. So got like 5 hours that night. My flight was 4 hours. I slept about 3 hours. And then I took an hour nap after work today. So, okay. So what is that? That's 8 hours and 48 hours?
Hey, you're supposed to sleep 8 hours a night. That's good. Well, just ignore the time frame. But don't worry, we're going to let Eric sleep after this.
Yeah, different time zone anyways.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling it.
Yeah. I want to jump back to Eric's Vancouver trip, and we're going to talk all about this. But Parker, I want to pass it over to you. What you've been up to. You know, I know you got stuck with some work again this weekend, but I know you're enjoying some of the stream. And any other fun highlights from the weekend or fun showings at Locals lately?
So what I do at Locals, I played a post rotation. I saw this City League deck. It was like Charizard plus the Ogre Ponds. So I was like, let's try it out. And I feel like I played like out of my mind every game just to like barely squeak by. So I don't know. Got to do some revisions on that deck.
Get some score credit from that?
I did. I ended up topping.
Hey, you?
Somehow. But, I mean, Charizard EX, still a good card if there's no grass guy on the field. So, today I came home and there was a woman, passed out in front of my apartment door. That was fun.
What?
I guess it's someone that lives here, but she was... seemed to be under some kind of influence and sure. I guess was at the wrong apartments, I guess.
That's wild.
You didn't hear about your new roommates?
Yeah.
Just moved into it.
She's just asking for rent.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, Parker's having to do all this great thinking to make top eight at Locals. In the meantime, I showed up to Locals with Conkeldurr. Conkeldurr, little poison box, found a list from online and managed to make top eight with those as well. So it's fun deck. I like have a little bit of a break until Atlanta. So I've just been, my goal is kind of like play all the fun F block decks before they are fully leave, even though Conkeldurr is mostly sticking around. But other than that, I really just kind of like tuned into Vancouver Regionals, had a little bit of a chill weekend and had a nice time overall. But Eric, you were there on the boots on the ground in Vancouver. You talked about rolling the dice at the casino, but you also rolled the dice a little bit with your deck choice. A little bit. So how would you break down
real gamble.
How Vancouver went for you.
I didn't feel good about Maridon coming into the event with Goldingo's presence in the meta. Yes, you can play Defiance Band, moon package like Azul did, and maybe that's fine. I just didn't test it enough into it, so I wasn't feeling comfortable. And I really, really wanted to play Palkia Dustar. Like, I've been wanting to play that deck since like before Mexico. So I tested it again, and it beats everything but Dragapult, so I just, couldn't play it. I'm just like, I just can't play this. So ended up going with Lugia after talking to Rahul. Shout out to Rahul on his Metafy group. He got a cool idea with the Radiant Charizard, putting it into the Lugia deck. Kind of helps your Goldingo matchup significantly. Slightly helps your Archaladon matchup, and even just kind of gives you some other ways to, take a single prize knockout at the end of the game, or two prize knockout with single prizer, while you're Ioning late.
Zero prize.
Or something like that. Yeah, zero prizer, right? So I really like the list. I played Bundle. His original list did not play a 1-1 Cinccino, which I did not feel comfortable with at the time, because I did kind of respect Archaldon going into the tournament a little bit. So I cut Fez and fourth boss since I played the bundle for the 1-1 Cinccino. After the tournament, I kind of feel like the Cinccino was definitely the right call. I don't know if the fourth boss I missed. There was definitely some situations where I like I really want a fourth boss here, and we'll get right into that. It came up immediately in round one, like immediately.
Ain't the round one punish for a good deck choice, right?
Don't you know all you do is set up two Archeops and play boss's orders for the rest of the game?
Yeah, I mean, well, the bundle is a boss, kind of, So in round one, I hit Archaon right out the gate. So I win game one pretty standardly. Like, everything's gone fine. Game two, I kind of break a little bit. They get going, they kill Meli Lugia. Eventually, I just concede. We like go to the next game because I can't. I think that game Radzard or the energy was prized, one of the two. So I wasn't able to pull off the bundle boss play, which is what's really cool about the deck. So go to game three. My setup's pretty clean. Like I'm feeling good. I take the first knockout with two double turbos on a Lugia, and they respond with like I don't know, like KO something on the bench. And I'm like, cool, I've got Cinccino here, ready to go. I don't know, it was something. It came up to where I had no energy in hand out of a five-card hand. And I have research, but I also have two boss in hand. So it's like I have to research one of those two boss and just KO the active with Cinccino. And so it comes down to like a war of attrition with resources that like once those bosses are gone, I'm not able to like consistently stream knockouts. And then so the end of the game, it came down to, and they were playing like an Irida build, so they can get like the Greninja
Mike
plus
Lemignon.
Cyclone or something, or Lumineon plus
Okay.
Cyclone. So like it came down to like Iota one. If you don't hit Turo, I win. And he hit Turo, so they hit the Irida. So good build, right? Skill diff.
Yep.
That's okay. It was still fine. I felt fine in that matchup. And then immediately hit two Goldangos, which. Super favorite matchup with the Radzard. So won those two matchups, feeling good, saw the meta chart. Felt like Lugia was still a good play for the tournament, not feeling bad at all. And then out of nowhere, hit a Charizard Pidgeot. I'm like, cool, that's fine. We know how to win this. It's Water Pond, into Amp or something, into Gigas. So we've got a lot of things to do. So game one, execute the strategy flawlessly, things going well. Game two and three is where I get super hairy. So I prize Legacy both game two and three.
Not
So
the pink card.
when you prize the pink card in that matchup, it's tough because you have to go like take a single prizer with Lugia. And then as soon as I did that both games, he's like, cool, Dusclops, kill your Lugia. I'm like, yep, now I'm behind in the prize rate, prize race, and things just went south from there. They were able to show boss like both games, take two prizes, so pretty brutal. But again, like I said, still feeling fine. Like the list was good. I didn't really break a ton. Dragapult, Dustor, round five. Ended up in a natural tie because again, prize two boss. And I had four prizes. And so I took two prizes, and if I take one of the bosses, I win. And the two bosses are in my last two prizes. So I end up forcing a tie because that keeps me in day two condition still. And then the next round six, I hit another Charizard Pidgeot, and I definitely just bricked both games, like mega bricked both games. And like I knew it, like when I was X2-1, I was like, round six, seven, or eight, I'm gonna break one of these games, right? Like it's just Lugia, it's just how it happens. And then immediately right out of the gates, didn't summoning star round six. So that was the end of that tournament run. And but no big deal. I mean, the weather in Vancouver sucked, but like the venue and like the people. And the area was like beautiful. It was definitely everyone said it's a great city. Definitely a little annoying that every Canadian you talked to that wasn't a Pokemon fan was like, "Yo, Trump, eh?" Like the first conversation out of every like Canadian's mouth was like, "So Trump, eh?" And I'm like, "Let me just not talk politics and just like live."
That's funny. Was it cold still?
It was like, it was like 45, 50 degrees both days, and rainy both days. So that's why I went to the casino, Saturday night, because there wasn't really anything outside to
Anything to
do.
do. Yeah.
And then I was going to try and make the Canucks game on Saturday, Sunday, but it was just a little tight with my flight, so I just didn't do it. Kind of hung out, watched some finals, talked to some people, support some people, made sure Azul had some snacks for his last round so he could win some money. It was a good time. No, I definitely love Vancouver. The flights home for West Coast are just freaking brutal, man. They're so
Yeah, the
rough.
red eyes are rough.
But what's not brutal is finding out that you randomly ordered some cards back in November and then they came in over the weekend. So I had two booster bundles waiting for me when I got home from Prismatic.
Yo.
So I opened one, got absolutely nothing. But anyways, this one I'm going to be giving out to one lucky listener of this podcast. I will not be posting this on Twitter. It will not go on any posts. You only find it by listening to this podcast, commenting on this episode, and you need to comment the word Vancouver Prismatic Evolutions. So
That's
three
three
words.
words.
Yeah, three words. Vancouver Prismatic Evolutions. The only other criteria is you must be going to Atlanta because I'm not shipping it. So I will bring it to Atlanta and
Could be
I'll.
local.
It could be low. Yeah, I'm gonna do the drawing probably. Maybe in two episodes. So you got 2 weeks to listen to this. And then leave a comment below with Vancouver Prismatic Evolutions.
You're doing it live on the pod?
Yeah, maybe we'll do it
Wow.
live on the pod.
Hey.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, comment below on the YouTube video for any of our Spotify listeners. A good reason to hop over and double check, make sure you subscribe, even though we really appreciate you listening on Spotify or whatever your favorite audio platform is. But yeah, Prismatic Evolutions is hot and would love to get you some packs.
It's six packs. These things go for what, $75? I'll
Something like
probably
that.
break the seal, to be honest, whoever I give it to. Just because
Yeah.
like I don't want you to resell it. Like I'm doing this to shake up with some packs.
True. I
There.
just saw a thing, Nintendo New York. They're doing a whole thing, but like you wait lines and you can go and buy like a single pack of Prismatic Evolutions from them. But it's like one per customer. But wait, but
What, for
Park,
5 bucks?
Parker's making the faces at me, but you can go sell one pack at MSRP and you can walk into a store and buy a pack and open a pack of booster cards as opposed to like trying to show up at your local Walmart and be like, oh, whoops, there's people sitting here that are bought all the product and have already flipped it.
I know there's
Yeah.
like one store, like I follow them. What's their name? Out. Oh, I'm like 2 seconds. I'll have it.
And I guess buying one pack isn't that bad if there's not like a half hour wait for the one pack, but
Yeah, just like if you're going in the store that day, you can like make a reservation to like claim a pack, and you can use your
cool.
code to go in and buy one pack. And I'm like, I
Cool.
think that's fine. Like, you gives
Yeah.
you a chance to visit the store and
Anyways,
yeah.
green, here it is. Okay, Safari Zone. So Safari Zone, like last week they let people come in and buy like two or something like that, but they like broke the seal. Like that, and like they were like selling like a little just a very little bit above MSRP. And like the only rule was like break the seal. I like that. I'm cool
Yeah.
with that. So
Good stuff like that.
yeah, it's
So.
Vancouver, disappointed in the run, it sucks. I mean, I've gotta like pretty much I'm all in on Atlanta now. So I've gotta, get a really good finish in Atlanta to kind of secure my world invite. Otherwise, probably won't be going to California this year. So, well.
Well, we got some time to prep here and for Atlanta,
Yep.
and I know a lot of y'all listening are also going to Atlanta. I will be prepping a lot of that, and as we get into episodes a little bit closer to Atlanta, we'll be doing our full post-rotation breakdowns. Full Atlanta deck list, see what decks we think are going to be hot or not potentially, and some other stuff like that. So we'll make sure you get it all prepped up. But real quick, we do have a little more time left of this format. So let's talk a little bit about how Vancouver went. First off, big news. This was a 12-person asymmetrical cut, the largest asymmetrical cut we've seen in a North American regional so far this season. And actually, the lowest point threshold required for an asymmetrical cut, only needing 29 points. So 912 was enough to make. Top cut, including from our eventual champion, Andrew Hedrick, entered in at 912. So, but real quick, I mean, I just want to talk about some of the decks. So, we saw some of the, usual suspects, right? We did see two Dragapults in the top asymmetrical cut. Saw two Goldangos, but on a bit of a rise lately. Saw Maridon, missed at EUIC, but it came back. Saw Archaladon, again, back from EUIC. But a couple other ones we weren't expecting. Two Lugias back in asymmetrical cut. Saw one Gardevoir. And then we got, one Pidgeot control, and it's really a hybrid control, plus a Regidrago and a Roaring Moon. So lots of diversity here at the top. And what's y'all's first take? I mean, we have Roaring Moon and Redudrago and Lugia back. I mean, almost every relevant deck in the format, and even some of the non-relevant decks in the format made cuts. So, like, what's y'all's takeaway from this top eight, from this top eight of this top 12?
Honestly, I'm actually not surprised to see Regidrago up there. I knew someone good was gonna take it, and I forgot what I said for my prediction. I think we did a prediction about it, or maybe I'm just remembering wrong, but I'm like, yeah, it's good. It's good. Roaring Moon, I'm really surprised about, though. The deck is incredibly strong. Maybe like the strongest deck on paper. Not matchup wise, but like you can kill anything. 220 turn one. Boom, boom, boom. Like
Pokemon Catchers, Judge.
Yeah, Pokemon Catcher, yeah. Judge. Like, it is really good on paper, but I was just like, how do you beat Dragapult? Like, you got it. Do the thing, and then they just Dusclops your active, and they kill all your guys, and like, I don't
know. I mean, it came in the number one seed on 10-101.
Yeah.
I mean, based off of what's in Arcanine or in Pokedata, doesn't look like he hit any Dragapult.
That's pretty good.
He hit a lost zone. Oh, he hit Daichi round 9.
Yeah.
Playing Lost Zone Hydreigon.
Isn't that true?
That's what it says on Pokedata. What does Limitless say?
Lost Box, no Hydreigon.
No Hydreigon. Okay, but just straight. Okay.
He played against a couple
Snorlaxes,
which I guess should be good.
He had two Snorlaxes, A Ginsburg. He hit Ginsburg round 4 and immediately.
Do you play Petrit? Yeah. All right, good game.
Good game. Yep. Emmett early, yeah. Exactly. I mean, came out as number one seed. I mean, you know, Moon's always a good, strong deck. Like Parker was saying, it's like you just got to hit the right matchups. And I think that, like, you know, he hit two Lugias and was able to, like, win tie against them, which I think is, like, very good.
Pretty good, yeah.
And that's, like, a hard matchup to win. Looks like the last one was an ID into cut.
Probably, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Moon's just a strong deck. And as long as you play it well, I mean, I think. You know, the question you asked, Maddox, was like, what's our takeaway? And I think the takeaway is that the good decks are good. And, you know, any other fringe, quote unquote, decks are also good if you know how to play them and, like, don't hit, like, the worst matchups in the room, you know, whatever is bad for you. Or have, you know, bad pricing or whatever. Like, there's so much variance that does go into top eight, but we do see consistently the strongest players, you know, consistently making top eight. Shout out to Anil from Shift Gear Podcast for making his first top eight. So just happy to be there rooting him on. Sadly, he hit Caleb Rodgerson in top eight. And I watched that match. I was standing right there. And, like, Caleb went first both games, game one and game two, and, like, had, like, 5 energy on the board both games by the time it was Anil's first turn. And, like, he was just, like, Ultra Ball from Magneton, have it in hand also on top of that. And it's like,
What do you do?
He plays one candy in his build. And, like, he found it game one, and he had a route game two. But he had to miss – he missed the second counter catcher game two to kill the Raichu to have a chance to win. There were still other ways for Caleb to win. But, yeah, unfortunate for Anil, but congratulations on his first top eight in a very long time. I know he was excited about it. And – we got the win over Rowan on stream, and let's see Ship Gear Podcast doing well. Hopefully, you know, that correlates to this podcast as soon as.
I would like to say, Lee Bowie's one loss was actually to Dragapult. I just went and found the guy.
Cool.
Yeah, so I was like, he hit one and lost, good. I guess. Fair.
Yeah, no, very, very cool. Very cool top eight. I mean, the list of players, right? I mean, all some of the players who lost in Asymmetrical can also list of very, very strong players. Salman, who's been on a tear of back-to-back top eights regionals for him. Christian LaBella, Makani Tran, also losing an asymmetrical cut. Like I said, shout out to Anil, Shift Gear Pod. Ali Boy, he always goes on one of these mega deep runs on one of these West Coast regionals. It seems like, you know, every year or a couple of years or so. So shout out to him. And then, like we said, finals, a very exciting match between, you know, two very strong players right now. And, of course, and Andrew Hedrick and Lucas Zing. Yeah. So... And I think also, I mean, the big standout to me, I think, as well, is Goldango sticking around, right? We saw it show up again in UIC, did show a lot of conversion, and also, we actually saw four of them in the top 16 overall, so very, very high conversion rate. Luka Zhang actually playing some very interesting tech cards as well, which will lead us into our segment. Do you know what every single card in Standard does? So here, right, there's a single prize Goldango that is played from the Surging Sparks. Actually, no, it's not from Surging Sparks. Yeah, it is from Surging Sparks. What does the single prize Goldango from Surging Sparks do, Eric Parker?
Can I
It
can
does like
answer?
90 more if they evolve.
Yeah,
But
for
there's like
one.
there's
Need to
like
attack
one.
with? What are the numbers? What are the stats?
It's
Explain this card to me.
It's like
one for
130
30.
HP, right?
One for 30.
One for 30, 90 more if it evolved that turn.
And then I think it's like three for 80 or 100 or something like that.
Yeah, I think second tail attack's not very relevant.
I don't remember what it
It is,
does.
but and we play in the world where every single attack on every card in Standard is relevant. So the second attack does what?
I don't know.
So the second attack is Surf Back for three colorless energy. You may shuffle, it deals 100 damage, and you may shuffle this Pokemon and all attached cards into your deck.
Yes. Maybe one
Yeah,
day.
maybe one day.
I think what I heard is that it comes up in like control matchups. You have a way to
Sure,
like
yeah.
cycle things back in the deck, and technically a
Sure,
cornerstone
sure.
out. So,
Yeah.
is it that good? I don't know, but
I
was
mean,
it an inclusion? It's a
round
little
three
funny.
opponent played it.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I have the ability of knowing it from that.
Nice.
I
Yeah,
just
and
remember.
ultimately, Lucas and John Ang, then they kind of, the little group that put this card together, at least in the second place list. And really the idea here is the Striker Rich gives you that mirror tech, or into Cerulege or any deck that you play one prize revolving into a two prizer, lets you evolve and take the first prize, forcing your opponent to then put the two prizer in play to respond. And then, if they put that two prizer into play, then you can still keep responding. And once you take that first knockout, then you're still getting the prize lead. Since they have to respond, and
Yeah,
if
that's
they
kind of
don't, then
cool.
you can just evolve in your two prize or take another prize, and you're still up 4-6 at this point. So
Yeah, that's kind
neat
of cool.
inclusion. Again, not sure if it's a card that we'll see in more Goldangos, but a card to know that it exists. I'll be hitting y'all with more. What does every single card in Standard do? Especially as we have some more cards coming out. Let's talk about some of the conversion real quick. I think, and we can also use this to kind of cover some of our predictions as well.
Sounds good.
So I think first off, when it came to, let's see, let me open this new tab. When it came to some of our day one meta chart, honestly, we saw 18% for Dragapult at EUIC, and actually we saw an increase to 19%
Yeah,
in
neither of
day
you thought it
one.
was going to go down. That's why I put the over under at 20, and both of you like hammered the under here. And you were really close to being wrong. Like, if I put
Rare.
19%, like, you would have been wrong.
Wrong.
I had the inclination. Hey everyone, my name is Eric Ridgway. I'm the host of the Beach Court Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you're enjoying it, please take a moment to like, comment, subscribe on this video on YouTube. It'd really help out the podcast a lot. We've got more episodes, highlights, and more coming your way. Thanks for listening. And now back to the show. That like it was going to go up. That's kind of why I asked that prediction to you guys. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a 20% deck right now, and we'll see how that kind of converts into next format in Atlanta. While Dragapult's still good, yes, they lose Laminia, they lose Rotom, lose Force Seal Stone, but Dragapult's still gonna be around. It ain't going nowhere.
Other big things to note. I Gardevoir at 10 like seems surprising as like the next deck. But honestly, we knew people were gonna show up and play Gardevoir last ride of Refinement Curlia here in North America. Second place being 10%, right? And I think this shows you, I mean, really the meta was a little more centralized here in a way. Where we see the top four decks taking up 50% of the room. But again, still a lot, especially, and we don't really see a full best of the rest, but still some big numbers here. Archaladon dropped a lot from UIC, dropping from that like 12% down to a 7.6. But Goldango and Lugia V-Star both at over 9%. So lots of people are here already for flying high for one last time, including Eric. So
Yeah, the Goldango prediction, that was one of our questions, was over under 5%. Both you guys smashed the over, so you got that one right. And then top 32 finish over under, both you smashed the over there. Also smashed that because Goldango was in finals.
And then Cloth, I think, was also over under
5%. Over under 5%. You'll be able to smash the over. Parker said 6.3
That's pretty good. That's pretty good, not gonna lie. So
yeah, pretty close.
I think the big piece here is that, you know, while Cloth did see an uptick in play, while it did win the UIC, it did miss out on top 8 appearance. I think the highest placing one was top 32. So maybe some folks were expecting a little bit more of it. But yeah, and then real quick, as we go into our day 2 conversion, we see Dragapult fall off a little bit. Again, when any deck is the most popular deck in the room, it's very, very hard for it to convert positively. But still going from a strong 19 to a very respectable 18%. Gardevoir, again, often choice of many players. And really all these, pretty much all the decks that we saw on the first day 2 chart all converted positively. Gardevoir from 10 up to 13, Golengo from 9 up to 13, Lugia from 9 up to 12. Claw from 7 up to 4-9 and
yeah, Arch is the one, right? The like that fell.
Yeah. Again, some people are saying it's on fraud alert, and some people are me.
It went down to 4.7% in day 2.
Yeah. Quite the change. Also lots of people came out for Lost Box and to give it one last run in again before it rotates next month. Lost Box pretty good showing. I don't think we quite saw the results. Towards the top tables.
There's some in top 16, I think.
Saw 20th place with the highest one.
20th, yeah.
The Simon Long shot to them. Yeah, so a couple in top 32. So still a strong showing. Definitely a deck that has that ceiling, right? We've seen Lost Box in so many finals and so many top 8s over its lifetime. So still good to know that's still kicking even in a Badoo world.
There's a couple other predictions that we had that we need to talk about. Over under Lugia's an ASM cut. Parker, you said over. Max, you said under. The number was 1.5. Parker,
I said
you got
two.
That one right.
Yeah.
So, this couldn't be me. Anyways, next one was over under Canadians and ASIM cut.
Yeah, I got cooked on this one.
The line was set at 2.5. Maddox went under and Parker went over. And there was 4 in ASIM cut. So, another win for Parker. Next one was, what will the surprise deck of the tournament be? Parker said Lost Box. Maddox said Palkia Dustor. And I said Dialga Matang. I think the closest one there was Lost Box. So, Parker, you got that one. I think really the surprise deck of the tournament was probably Drago in top 8, top 9. I don't know. Maybe that's probably like the most surprising deck.
No, also Pidgeot Control.
Is that a surprise, though?
Well, so we didn't really talk too much about Amon's list. But Amon did choose for a secret box Pidgeot Control build, but also this is not your conventional Pidgeot Control. It played a 2-1-2 Pidgeot line, plus 2 Snorlax, plus it played the Feeboss and Melodic EX to wall out Terras, and the Melodic for Dasat Turo, plus played a Water Pond, played a Badoo, a very, very, very toolboxy type deck.
Thank you, played a Badoo? That's crazy.
Yeah, played Badoo, played it's Water, Ogre Pond. Played a Luxray V, played like the whole suite, and played the Giacomo, played 2 TM Evo. I mean, they were cooking for
they
sure.
They were cooking.
But got him a top 8, so cook away. When it works, it works. So.
And the last prediction that we had was, what wins the tournament? Parker said Gardy. I said Archaladon, and Maddox said Dragapult EX.
Said, when you come for the king, don't miss. And Andrew Hedrick, one of the best players of our time, has showed up and played the best deck in the room and proved he was the best player in the room as well. So
yeah, like undefeated in finals is a crazy stat.
I saw the MJ comparisons, never lost in finals type of thing. And Lucas Singh even did a good call on stream saying, "Hey, I'm gonna hand you your first loss," type of thing, and did not quite
get
there.
You know what's crazy? Andrew Hedrick and I both have never lost in finals.
Damn, that's crazy.
Wow. Astonishing statistic there.
I'm just saying, that's kind of crazy, bro.
And before we wrap up our Vancouver discussion, I just want to talk about some of the highlight plays. Again, from some of these best players in the room. Again, even though we are at the end of the format, we're still seeing some incredibly high-level play from some players, you know, and new ways and new interactions that we weren't expecting. So in top 8, we saw Andrew Hedrick, again, of course, who was the eventual champion, versus Trevor Reed, who's playing Goldengo. A little bit different build than Lucas Zing, second place, but still, you know, pretty comparable to what we've seen before. You know, Andrew Hedrick, you know, kind of fallen behind a little bit, you know, found himself in a spot where he was down 6-2. And Hedrick went for not quite a you know, a little more of a potentially defensive play, but a really a little more of a smart play. Found Trevor in a situation where Trevor only had access to one energy left in hand, and Hedrick had stretchers left available. So actually went in for the Badoo item lock, and, you know, went in with two prizes left, went in and, you know, just Badooed item lock Trevor. He had his one energy left, went and recovered it. And then, you know, actually, I think even Hedrick comes with that with a counter catch or something like that, and was able to pull off the Turo plus knock out the Badoo. And then from there, Hedrick went stretcher, recovered the Badoo, and then Itchy Pollen again. And right, Goldango only plays item based energy recovery at this point. Found himself, I think there's two energy on board and 10 in the discard. So they're only playing 12 energies. Andrew Hedrick made a bet that he was playing just 12 and decked him out on the table to win top 8.
You know, we talked about this, I think, when Goldango was on the scene in Europe, Max, where I was like, how is Goldango beating Dragapult when Dragapult could just do that play? So nice to see, like, the play actually happen and what I was thinking be true. Because at the time, I think, like, previous to USC, the standard was, like, 10 energy for Goldango. Like, in my head, I was always doing the math with 10. I'm like, okay, well, they do 7 to knock you out. You know, plus they've attached, that's 8. So then you can just go 2 more. Obviously, the list that were played in EUIC would have been defensive around that. So interesting to hear about that play. I didn't see it happen because I was in the crisis mode of finding my passport that I left in my Uber that morning. So that was fun. But last we got it and we're home.
Yeah, no, it's it was a neat play to see actually happen. And again, one of those spots where I think it was in a situation where Trevor didn't have enough ways to, like, recover extra energy and hold it in hand. There might have been a situation where they could have held an energy and maybe, like, held off the monkey door damage or something like that. But those types of situations, those kind of catches, like, you know, it's like, oh, I have an energy left, I'm safe if they Badoo. And it's like, oh, wait, what if they just Badoo again? And we're able to keep chaining the Badoos. So are we in a spot where if you're playing Goldango, you need to make sure you have, like, access to 3 energy at all time, like, in hand, just to get around that enough times? So
I think the answer is yes. I mean, item lock is a real threat, right? Like, that's why it's there.
Yeah. I've even seen some Goldangos opt to play, like, a copies of Lana's aid or something, so you have a supporter way to recover some energy. So another potential option for anyone who maybe, any Goldango players who saw that and, you know, started crying or feared a potential of that happening to them, or maybe has had that happen to them, the item lock future. And then our in top 4, we saw Leeboy again playing Roaring Moon against Goldango with Lucas Zing. Again, not quite a matchup we've seen too much, right? A matchup that doesn't come into play too much. Ultimately, and Lee was able to, again, continue changing Roaring Moons. Really has to use Frenzy Gouging in order to take the knockouts, just because they don't really have a great way to hit 260 otherwise, but are able to put on that continuous pressure. And really, I think it's a deck where, like, if you can take the lead, just take a two prize lead, basically, then you can kind of get way ahead of the game, and Goldango doesn't really have a way to catch up as long as you can keep creating those two prizes. So Lucas did opt to play a copy of Roxanne in his list, which wasn't often seen in Goldango's previously, so I think that did contribute to a lot of his success. Lucas also played a Palpaz, a way to recover it. Leeboy was, again, able to just kind of constantly chain with the Petron EX to push to the active poison, push to the active the Roaring Moon, and keep powering it up. So Luke's able to go on one turn. So when he's down 5-3, able to set up, okay, Roxanne, my opponent, KO by just discarding a single energy because they had already damaged himself for 200. And then, you know, Lee able to go and recover, attack again with Spiritomb going on to just one prize remaining. And then all in one turn, Lucas Zing is able to Palpad back his Roxanne, draw back into it, including using Pokégear. And then also goes for a very, very surprising line featuring his other tech inclusion, Spiritomb. So again, when Leeboy went to attack, he, you know, dealt damage 200, damaged himself for 200, but by using Petron EX as subjugating chain, made himself poison, so he took 1 damage. So bench the Spiritomb, switch into Spiritomb, attach the metal energy attack for next turn, slam down the Roxanne, refresh the hand to 6, and then use Fade Out to put Roaring Moon to 220 HP. Roaring Moon dies to poison, meaning Pheasantipity is no longer in play. Also comboed that with a Lost Vacuum, getting rid of Pokestop. So left Lee unable to recover at the end of the game and take that final knockout. So that was how Lucas Zing punched a ticket into at least to win game 1, and then eventually won game 2 as well. So, but Really next level play, and honestly, the most relevant that Spiritomb. I mean, what a great final showing for Spiritomb, right? A card that is not rotating but is going to be left basically unemployed starting next month. Really, with one big final showing and one the fade out of all fade outs before it fades out into the bulk bins. But yeah, a nice little line that I don't think most people would have found. And when I saw the line happening in real time, I was like, oh, that's genius.
Yeah, I didn't see this play, but like as you're like describing it, like I'm like, I saw where the path was going as you're like, yes. Oh, Spirit Tomb, and like, I'm like, oh god, he's poisoned, so he's just gonna make it where Fez, because like I use that play all the time with against Cloth, like when I was playing Badoo and they'll Badoo me and poison themselves, I'm like, sick, Badoo you back, you died of poison, bud, yep. Like gonna get wrecked. So that's a pretty cool line to find. What did he push up afterwards? Did he push a two prizer?
He was just able to push a gold angle. Lee only had one prize left, so he's able to push the gold angle and force the gouge.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay.
Lee did actually hit heads on a catcher to bring up, I think, like the Greninja or something that was benched, but did miss the attack, didn't have a way to follow
Dang.
Up. Was able to find like Koridon and Sada, but couldn't find the energy to attach him. Plus, had no way to switch it in the active since Koridon is not a dark type.
Yeah, he's not dark.
So, needed either like attachment and dark patch to attack with Petron plus a switch. So, needed a few pieces, wasn't quite able to get there, but again, wasn't expecting Spiritomb to be the bane of anyone besides any salty UV Max players.
Ancient Boxer hybrid box did what it does and bricked game two.
Yeah. It happens, but exciting game one. So yeah, so I just kind of want to mention those in case anyone hasn't seen those, right? All these plays are available if you go back and watch the VOD from the previous format. I thought there was some really cool ones. And again, it especially shows even though this format is like on its way out, there's still lots of cool interactions and great plays you can see even with cards we're a little more familiar with, but same time makes sense to get excited for rotation. Before we show off Crispin's Corner, some of the hot decks from Vancouver and jump to our pre-releases, I know Eric has a trivia question for us, but before we do that, we need to talk a little bit about our sponsor. So Parker, we'll pass it over to you for this one.
Yeah. So missing on competitive action, you get plenty of it with at Nakama. They have their League Cup for the quarter Saturday the 22nd. Not quite sure on what's going to be like the price point or what prize support's going to be, but it's always a great time. You get to play against the pod, eat some good food, see if you can take down the win from the incumbent Maddox, who won all his cups in the last quarter. Don't stop there, because next Saturday after that one, the 29th, is the Nakama Card Show. We'll be playing there. We'll have post-rotation decks. We'll have regular decks too, probably. And you can try to stop us out for some prizes as well. I don't know exactly, again, what it's going to be. But there'll be plenty of people there buying, selling, trading product cards. And it's going to be a good time, definitely. You don't want to miss it. Yeah. So bring out your binders and decks and cards and catch us 2 weekends in a row. I knock my anime cafe.
Yeah. I've talked to plenty of all locals. Anyone who's been in town before, been like, oh, I want to come see y'all in Nakama. Like, end of March is the time where I get a little bit of downtime before Atlanta. Want to catch a game against us? We'll be around. Want to go and check out Nakama, sing some karaoke, get some tasty food. We'll be around. Let us know that you're going to be swinging by. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the mat for this quarter? Is it still Pikachu?
Oh, no. It is. Wait, do we know the mat yet? Yeah, we know the mat, yeah.
Oh, it's, for next quarter?
Not this quarter.
Oh, it's still Pikachu, yeah.
This quarter is Pikachu, yeah.
Is it next quarter again or no?
I don't think so.
Probably not until April. Probably going to be turning together, though.
Hopefully it's at least really Clefairy mat.
Could even be ends Zoroark.
That Clefairy mat was dope that Brazil got. We didn't talk about Brazil at all, but there's not much to talk about when the Fernandez brothers just run over everyone and make it to finals.
They are literally the GOATs.
So
they played the exact same 60, won in both juniors and seniors. Vinny taking on Pedro Pertusi in finals, Dragon Ball versus Gardevoir. And hey, they're good at the game. What can I say?
They're crazy.
All right, so my turn to stomp you guys up on some trivia. I love doing these type of segments, bringing some fun questions. This one's, my memory's terrible and I was very tired today. So you might get a free one. Because it's possible that I've done this question before, but I can't remember if I've done it before.
It was how many EXs are in Journey together. We did that one last week.
So, the last 9 regionals that have occurred in the continent or the country of Canada have been won by Americans. The last 9.
Oh.
Who are the 9 Americans that have won the last 9 Canadian regionals?
I think we did this one, but it was what was the last Canadian to win or something?
Like the non-American. Yeah, the answer was Pedro. Oh, sorry, Pablo.
Pablo, yeah.
Pablo Mesa.
So we're the last 9 Americans to win regionals.
We're the last 9 Americans to win the Vancouver,
goodness.
Toronto, and any other Canadian regionals.
So we got Andrew Hedrick. We got Cal Connor from Toronto. We have Toronto in 2024. Cal Connor, I was going backwards.
Yeah,
Vancouver before that was not Kenneth Gilman, but it was a Maridon player. Because that was the PNE Maridon on that one Brent 4 rotation last year in Vancouver.
What's that? Like,
let's see.
Toronto. I actually don't remember.
Yeah, the Toronto before that was Azul with Charizard. And now we're stretching beyond my memory into the previous Vancouver. I don't know, Piper was Toronto before that, but Vancouver 23.
Vancouver before that. Was it you?
No, I like what person?
I know. I was hoping like maybe if we knew the deck, it would jog our memory.
Oh wait! Oh, this was when was this the one that this was like Reagan got second place with Lugia, or maybe actually this is Ian Robb won. I think it was Ian Robb who won with Lugia in Vancouver in 2023.
Yeah, sure. Or with it.
Yeah, and the Piper was the Toronto before that, and then everything else was pre-COVID. So I'm out.
Was it? There wasn't a 2022 Canada one.
Well, 2022 Toronto was Piper.
What's that 20? Oh my god. Old.
Yeah, you're old, bud.
So it'd have to be pre-COVID.
I think that's pretty impressive what we did. Eric, do we really need the other 3? I'm sure they're talented players.
I wasn't keeping track because there's one you said that is true that wasn't on my list. I'm trying to figure out what happened.
He doesn't even know.
But I mean, I'm honestly getting the last 6.
It's pretty
from the past 3 seasons.
It's pretty nerdy.
That's pretty niche knowledge.
Why is this?
Does anyone else know this stuff, or is it just me? Or just us? So let us know in the comments if you actually knew all this stuff, or if you just jumped in the game last year. Actually, if you jumped in the game last year and you knew all the ones from the years before too, that's like super impressive. But if you've been playing around as long as we have, then let's go.
What you said was wrong.
I'm never wrong.
That's good. Okay.
No.
Well, Zul did not win in Canada.
That was, Toronto? Huh? No, he won San Antonio 24.
San Antonio.
That's what it was.
Third in Toronto.
Well, the first San Antonio in 2024.
Yeah.
So then the one before that, was that the Tina? No, that was San Antonio. That was the Tina game. What one when Charizard had that breakout game? That had to have been Tina again, right? It would have been before Portland. It was the tournament right before Portland. So Tina was still good.
All right, so the last 9, I don't remember who you got, so you guys ought to keep me honest because I was looking up here and it was a little thing. I was curious. Hedrick, Cal Connor, you got those. I think you missed Nathan Beck.
Yeah, we said him right on.
Right on.
And you missed...
Oh, JW with Maridon. That's what it was.
JW pretty well with Maridon.
That was a Canada one?
Yeah, I forgot that one.
That was Toronto, right?
I thought that was like...
Yeah. Ian Robb won one. Piper Lapine. And then going back before that, Parker Lish, Jimmy Penderverse.
And Darvis.
Darvis and Danny Altavilla.
Rip the goat.
Those are the 9. So yeah, looks like... Recent memory, you guys missed. Nathan.
I should have remembered those. I remember
it was Maridon. Yeah. I almost said Kenneth Gilman, but that's the person who got second at Sacramento with Maridon.
Yeah.
So
Stumped you this week, boys. Better luck next week.
What year is that, bro? Like,
I don't remember. I was just like going back, like up until it was like three pages.
When you got Altamio with a regional win, that's a long time ago.
It was like 4 pages deep on Limitless with 100 entries.
4 pages deep. Holy mackerel.
Toronto.
Is expanded. Jimmy Pendarvis won it in 2018.
Altavilla won May 18th, 2018. Yeah, May 12th, 2018.
He won Night March. Holy cow.
Also, I played some, I don't know what format it was, but I played some Blacephalon this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Baby Blues.
Sunday. Yeah. I played that versus, deck.
We know from our
versus,
episode.
Malamar. I was cooking Steven.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I have Baby Blounds and Malamar Guild.
Yeah.
There you go.
Baby Blounds is Andrew Hendricks' favorite deck. We know that from our NAIC interview, if you want to have a chance deep dive with our most recent regional champion and most recent North American international champion. Check out right here on the Beach Core Podcast.
Feeling it.
God, these names, man. Altavilla, Frank Diaz, Gustavo
Water. Oh. All right, y'all. You ready to cook a little bit?
Yeah.
I do want to call out something that's really you're talking about like older names and people that are doing really well this season. Michael Permawat has already made his way to head judge at his first season of judging. And I think that just goes to show like what we need in the judging community. You know, we need someone that really knows the game very well to, you know, step up and do it. So just want to shout out Michael Permawat for like being the GOAT and like judging this season and, you know, doing what he's done. Cause, you know, I heard some things that happened this weekend, and I heard he was right there kind of like, you know, just making sure the players were calm, that they understood what was going on, and like really controlling emotions and, you know, really understanding both sides of the stories, you know, and all the judge calls. I really didn't hear anything bad this weekend except for, you know, one small situation, but seemed like we had a pretty good weekend overall in Vancouver, and I think we're in good hands going forward with him at the realm.
Yep. And Pram also made on stream judging a few at least once, so saw him on stream there. So yeah, great to see players continue to contribute. I know, you know, Puka Sukovic also as well. Like, you know, has been in the game development for a while, but an original player of the game has been involved. And the more we see, you know, the skilled players of the game that, you know, care about the community get involved. Again, that's things that are I always view them as very, very good things. So shout out to Pram for being not only a world class player but a you know, top level judge.
All right, let's see who's cooking.
Yeah, so next up, we're going to jump into our Christmas quarter before we wrap up with a little bit of pre-release discussion for Journey Together. Again, how this works for Christmas Corner is we'll be randomly generating finding a list from the player roster from the most recent regional, which in this case is the Vancouver Regional Championship. We'll try to highlight a couple of lists that, you know, maybe didn't make day two, and we will discuss and speculate on who would win in a theoretical battle over the table with these. Gives us a chance to see what arts were chosen, any cool spicy decks are chosen. So yeah, let's get right into it. So we're going to first start with FG versus WW. We have the duplicates for true randomness. We'll also do some player ID sorting. I forgot the first letters. It was KW, I think.
FG, I think we had.
FG. Oh, it was FG.
FG and WW.
FG, HFI. Let's see, we have Dacian.
All
versus
right.
WW.
All right.
Nabil Shawa. All right. We have, you know, a 7-15 versus 6-15. So pretty evenly matched here. We have a classic Lugia versus Goldengo.
Oh, they got the Manaphy.
They do see the Manaphy inclusions counter the Lugia's Water Pond. But Lugia does have the 2-2 Cinchino line. Does give them some pretty good lines. Into things overall. Did opt for the four boss line here and a pretty standard lineup either way. So you see the three missed energy, no Vigar, but not really going to be relevant here. Versus Goldengo on the right. It looks like this is a pretty standard new build, we'll say. Does have the two dark and two waters. Only opts for one Turo, but does keep the Palpat. Did add the Roxanne and also playing the canceling Cologne and lost Vacuum with some tech. So not super relevant in this matchup, but. Gents, who do you have? Lugia versus Goldengo.
I mean, 2-2 Rat and Iron Hand seems like too much.
Yeah, seems like a Probably a Lugia win. I mean, I don't know. Goldango could win the coin flip, and then it's just I kill Lugia, you kill my guy, I kill your next guy. I don't know. We could.
Maybe.
Yeah, I've
Yeah,
heard it's just the legacy to offset the prize
you
trade.
just put legacy on Sentinel. Like, what do they do?
Yeah, and you can build a like a single
They hit
prize
you for
board.
80 and then monkey the next turn.
I mean, because
There
like
we
the other
go.
decks,
I
the
guess
other
you want
ones
that
where they're playing like
damage.
the new Goldengo, it does give you a little bit of a Wrath of Line into the Sentinel, because you can attack with a single prizer into it that's 130 HP and can't get amped back. But I think with this build, without that new Goldengo tech, I don't know if you're gonna fare well into Lugia. But again, Lugia can just not play the game. So there are some times where maybe they win that way. But I think in a theoretical match where both players are playing optimally and playing well,
You're
I think
drawing
Lugia is
well.
favored and
Good
going
year.
to take this one down pretty easily with a 2-2 Sinchino line.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Goldengo goes back to playing like Palkia builds and had the threat of Radiant Greninja to pick off the Mincinos before they got set up. And I think that would change the dynamic here a lot. But on paper, Lugia pretty favored here again, being able to use Legacy Energy with the Sinchino. Maybe a little bit too much to deal with, but also worth mentioning, Lugia can't really do too much else besides threaten with the Sinchino. So you can maybe set up for like a Lugia plus an Iron Hands play or an Aqua Return or some other shenanigans there. But it does seem a little bit tricky if there's some issues setting up the Mincinos.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, in terms of arts, let's see, some good full art selections from both players, honestly.
Does this he actually playing the gold energies down there though? Actually, he's got.
It's impossible to confirm.
Yes,
There's just a
yeah.
toggle button here, but we do know the art. We do know the exact arts. Yeah,
I
you got
mean,
optimal
gotta
Goldengo.
give the shout out to the player on the right with assuming they're playing the max rarity Radiant Greninja with the stamp, because we don't know that either. But they're all of their Pokemon are pretty much high rarity except for the Goldengos because they're expensive. But yeah, I like the Monkey Dory, it's beautiful. I like the Manaphy and the Fez, but the full art Iron Hands, the shiny Water Pond, the Flamineon's rest in peace. See you later, bud.
Don't
Yeah, I
worry, he'll
don't
be back in like three sets.
know. Oh, please.
A Tapu Lele Gia.
Yeah! That card was so goated.
All right, we're gonna
Just
bring
give us
it.
VS Seeker.
All right, we're gonna bring it back with a couple more decks here. We have OT versus DR. OT
Overtime
versus the
versus the
Doctor.
Doctor.
The Doctor. Got Mr. OT and Scott Patchett versus a Doctor. Imagine there's someone that's just like Doctor or something.
That'd
You
be
have
sick.
Michael Laundrie. Wait, are these? Oh, wait, no. Those are
Mike
the 400s.
Laundrie.
Michael Laundrie. Let's see what we got here. We have a Turbo Lost Box versus Dragapult with the Froslass and a Mawile. This
What?
is what you come to Crispin's Corner for, everyone. So, on the left here, we do see a honestly like kind of a similar like an unfair stamp inspired build. Kind of reminds us like the
A
Fernandez
Lost
brothers and
City?
Torrids. But you see a couple of those interesting tech inclusions, like the Defiance Vest, like the unfair stamp, like the Blood Moon Ursaluna. But also opt to play a Lost City, a Monkey Dory with a Dark, and a 1-1 Froslass line to with Freezing Shroud to put a damage on your bench, put all on all your Pokemon with abilities.
Listen, are you worried about killing a Pikachu? No, I'm just gonna set up Froslass and then I'm gonna Phantom
Phantom
Dive,
dive it.
and then I'm gonna kill it between turns. No, a
Yeah.
Turbo Lost Box, they can just Radiant Greninja your Froslass. It
Yeah,
don't
but
matter.
like if they
Yeah, it's never
don't,
happening,
but
bro.
that the main Lost
What do you mean? What do you
Box.
mean it's never happening? That's what the deck's designed to
It's never
do.
happening, bro. It's never
Yeah,
happening. I'm
not
gonna
even once. All
Phantom
right,
Dive your
let's.
Pikachu, put six on Comfy, and I'm gonna not take three prizes with Froslass
Our Turbo Lost Box deck on the right, a pretty standard Turbo Lost Box, at least what we're seeing. It does include the Sableye, which we think is a pretty important factor in this matchup. It does play Iron Hands, Pikachu EX, an Iron
between.
Bundle, two Cramorant actually, so really respecting Badoo threats and those other single prize Pokemon. Does include the Fez, Blood Moon Ursaluna, and the Regigigas to help in the Dragapult. The trainer lineup, pretty standard, is playing a Prime Catcher. A little less on Switch, only playing two Switch in addition to the four Switch cart, but
No
the
Poke
two
Gear.
Jet Energy. No, one Poke, no, still the spec
No
Poke
Poke.
Gear.
I meant stop. My
Oh, no,
bad.
Pokestop. Oh, really opting for the Artisan. So a lot of respect to Badoo here. So actually, I think if we played this matchup several times, we'd probably get a lot of different results. Because the nice interactions with, like, we have ways in this Turbo Lost Box deck respecting the double Bidoo of our Dragapult, Frostlass, Cook, you know, including the Jet Energies and the Armazon Skit things.
I've got the promo Frostlass on the left.
True. Promo Frostlass is pretty notable. But also the double Cram plus the Jet Energies of the Artisan. Like, you have a lot of ways to deal with that Bidoo. And even the double boss help, you know, respecting your Clefki or things like that.
You're only playing one gear.
Well, you're right.
You play it when just, you're getting Bidoo.
Just open a Chorus and a new Chorus into your next Chorus. Have you not played Lost Box before?
Yeah, yeah. I've never
you Chorus in the Chorus every time.
No,
comment
never.
Below if you've ever missed a Chorus.
100 out of 100 times. Literally, we'll never miss it. It's impossible.
No, I think this is I think it's very interesting. I mean, obviously the Frostlass does set up some really interesting plays. If you can combine it with like a Mawile trap, and Unfair Stamp, like, you know, or probably Bidoo plus Unfair Stamp and just like put damage and play with Frostlass. I think even buying just one turn with that, like, could even be enough potentially.
I mean, I think just like the moment the Dragapult combines Stamp, Frostlass, attack with Dragapult and Stamp in the same turn, plus like Lost City, the Pikachu.
Well, you're not Pikachu here. You're using Regigigas.
Okay, lost. But like, I have an attack, so you would be attacking with like Iron Hands or something, probably.
Yeah, I mean, they can go threaten Iron Hands or like a Radiant Greninja.
I don't know. I mean, it just seems like the stamp turn, like plus attack plus Frostlass, seems like deadly.
Yeah, I mean, the Frostlass to be able to just put extra damage into play and like really start to overwhelm, and also actually. There's your damage mod, right? You know, if you're worried about, you know, I mean, honestly, it does act as a damage mod in a way, right? Is if for Comfy specifically, you can put six onto one Comfy and then freezing shroud six and KOs the Comfy.
And it doesn't trigger Fez.
Yeah, if you were to smack into like an Iron Hands or something, yeah, exactly. So
even if you smack into Pikachu or something, right?
True. Yeah, if they did attack Pikachu and you did go to 190 to Pikachu, yeah. But I don't think you attack Pikachu in this matchup. There's like no point to attack a Pikachu in this matchup.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right. But like we said, I think if you play this game out multiple times, I think you get a couple of different results every time. But I want y'all to let me know, who do you have favored here?
Dragapult.
I think Dragapult. Lost Box Enjoyer.
Dragapult slightly, but like I know Mike Landry. I know, even though I just butchered his name, but like he's a very good player, so I think he would like pick up on things game one and then have a better game 2/3 kind of thing.
I'm not finishing game 3, bro.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, you gotta.
But he's like, it's a tie, of course.
It's a tie. Toss
box is Dragapult, of course.
They
it's a draw. Tie. No, I do like how Michael Landry's list is really respecting a lot of the potential things that like a Dragapult could do with the Bidoo and the Jet Energy and Artisan. But Defiant's Vest also being a good tech for the Regigigas, plus the Unfair Stamp, plus you can throw some pressure with the Lost City. I think it's probably just a little bit too much. Just the extra tools. Assuming your Dragapult is able to survive and get into a Bidoo, you know, turn one or two. I do think probably would have to give it to Dragapult here. It's just such a tough matchup for Lost Box, but in the hands of a skilled player like Michael, I do think that this list does have everything it needs to beat a list like this. So, all right, let's tackle one more. If QX, man, that's definitely not showing up in the roster, but we'll see. Versus ZS, this might be a little rough. QX, anyone? QY, QZ, we go back around. QA. Kale. We have a Canadian, and actually let's have a Canadian matchup for this last one as well, if we can find one. The ZU Azul. We feature him enough. I guess we'll go with Japan. Kazuki here from Japan. So
yeah.
Oh wait, is this this is
Continental Divide.
Content divide. So we have on the Japan side, we do have Goldango. Oh no, this is a Goldango mirror.
Goldango mirror. Oh wait, no, we got
Goldango Dragapult.
Wait, that changes everything. Hold up. So we're on the Japanese side, we have a Goldango Dragapult with the Bidoo versus a straight up Goldango. So we have consistency versus options, y'all.
So shout out LDF. The list on the right probably has to be pretty close to like LDF's list, I think he played two Clef Keys in his. But he did play Goldango one pull with two Clef Keys.
Yeah, shout out to LDF, a friend of the pod, and basically our fourth at this point. But the other times he subbed in, but also playing as a world. But yeah, here we have the 4-3 Goldango, really making extra space for that 2-2-2 Dragapult, plus the Clef Key, plus the Badoo, plus the Monkey Dory. The whole suite of options. We have the one Crispin, have a Vacuum, Counter Catcher, double Iono, plus the Energy Search Pro to get things rolling quick. Versus on the left, I think this looks pretty close to Xander Perot's top four list from EOIC. Again, if you want to hear more about that list, you can check out our episode prior to this with Xander. We do see the Palpat inclusion, which I don't believe Xander played. And I don't know the other cut. But I think just a couple changes.
They really want to beat Lax, bro. They want to turn four times.
I mean, can't really go wrong with that, honestly.
I guess, yeah.
So I was wrong. This is Xander's list. He did play the Palpat. I missed that. So
yeah, turn four times seems pretty good.
This is Xander Perot's Goldango list versus the Goldango technology with the Dragapult. Obviously what's clear is the Badoo does give a little extra edge of potentially being able to slow the setup of Goldango. Doesn't quite have a lot of ways to get into that Badoo. All of our attackers for the most part have two retreat unless you open that Badoo. Other inclusions, we can actually attack with Radiant Greninja in both decks. Both of them did opt to keep the two water energies. And on the right, the Goldango only has the two metal energies to make room for that extra water. So plus has the two fire and psychic. But honestly, if you get a turn one attachment to Greninja, you find that one of Crispin, you could do a quick Radiant Greninja attack turn two. So, gentlemen, Goldango standard, the Goldango we know versus the Goldango we don't. Who you got?
Probably the Goldango we know. I think it's probably just a little more streamlined at just hitting for a lot of damage, and that's all you have to do in a lot of your games. So.
Yeah, I mean, the player on the right does play the Counter Catcher.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting card. And two Ionas. I don't know. I think I agree with Parker. Like, maybe the list on the left is just, like, a little bit more consistent, straightforward. Because I don't think you're going to the Dragapult really much in this matchup, and Clef Key really isn't doing anything. I mean, like Max said, like, there is one combo there that's, like, very good if you find it, but, like, there's one Crispin, like, you're not finding it.
Two waters, one of them no be prize. You have to find turn one attached with the water.
I
definitely think the list on the right, again, I think it's some cool technology. Only the two metals, so a little bit of lack of consistency of being able to, like, you know, set up that early attacker to potentially, when you play Energy Search Pro, so like you could probably find it, but it's nice to have a surplus of those metal energy as your main attacker. Play on the right with the Goldango Dragapult does have disruption, right, which is not featured in Xander Pro's list, so if there is a way to come back in this game, it's probably something along the combinations of, you know, Lost Vacuum, way the Pokestop, Counter Catcher, a Dango, Iono, and then SPAC for 200 into the active, and then try to set up a boss play to take a four prize turn, similar to how Andrew Hedrick won plenty of games this past weekend. But I do agree, probably a little difficult overall. I'm also going to favor the Goldango that we know. And actually, I guess one difference from Xander Perot's list is did not have four of the minor air runnings. So, for anyone who knows Quail, Kale, hook them up with that extra Goldango or that extra Gimme Ghoul if they want it. But also, continuous coin toss, it deals infinite damage. You can't really go wrong with infinite damage.
Hit for 5,000, brother.
Exactly.
Good.
You want a mirror tech? Just flip enough heads.
That's right. I mean, the player on the right also plays three of them.
Yeah, in the Gimme Ghoul. Specifically face off, play on the right, certainly favored. So
before we end this segment, I do want to search for one other player. I would like you to please search for K-E-N-N and then pull up Andrew Kennett's list.
Andrew Kennett. Oh yeah. Just drew this. Did feature, and we saw on stream as well, the Flareon toolbox deck.
Yeah, so I saw him playing this, and he was like 3-0 at the time, or 2-0. I think he went on stream like the next round. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just wanted to see the list. What was in it? It's a 3 Crispin, a Black Belt, 2 Iono, Two Terra Orb. Love that. Only one Trumpet. Seems a little light on the Trumpets here.
Seems yeah, like I mean, being able to use Flare Out EX's Burning Charge to flood the energy into play.
Yeah.
As well as Zubat helps synergize with that. You know, and ultimately didn't need like too much energy. Like when I watched the game between Sparkling Crystal, you're able to set some situations. I forget exactly what deck they played against. It might have been a gold. I don't think it was Goldango. It was a cloth maybe. But the Carnelian, the Flare on EX attack, did get used a lot more times than I was expecting to see it used on stream today. Just a flat 280. Very, very neutrally good.
Also's got the Sylveon for the Angelite attack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think game three did not have time to resolve. So there was the one of Sylveon EX Angelite, and I believe at the end of the game, or you know, in order to help you know preserve the tie, since there was no longer win con for Drew, it was like shuffle in like the Brute Bonnet and like the Terapagos, like getting rid of the old Terra, getting rid of the Poisoner, and like all right, plus Iona. It's like all right, Iona with two, and you're not drawing anything off Fez. You have two cards. You need to like set up an attacker plus set up your poison. So.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, combo. Like, if I hit this as Lugia, I'd be so scared of that, man. Like, bro, like, both power caps gone. I'm like, no! Be kind of crazy.
Yeah, so pretty cool to see. So shout out to Drew Kennett again. Very talented player. Good to see this on stream. I think this was round four.
It was round four, he was 3-0, yeah.
Yeah, round four of stream. So anyone wants to check out this deck in action. Again, I'm big on watching all the old VODs because I just enjoy watching the game and seeing it played at a high level. We talked about some of the games already, and this was an interesting one as well. So, all right, any other lists before we highlight some of the pre-release promos before wrapping things up?
Nope.
All right. Last order of business for today is pre-release. So we have talked about pre-releases on this pod in the past. I think mainly sometimes we'll try to like highlight maybe how you should build your decks, things like
Max,
that.
I think you're sharing the wrong screen, bud.
Oh, whoops. There we go.
Good thing there was nothing bad on that tab at the bottom.
There we go. We have our Journey Together promos.
Oh, and sick. I think these are the promos?
Yeah, and I think what's very, very promising about these is they're all trainers Pokemon, right? Which trainers. I wasn't quite expecting. So we get to see Enstar Manitan. Again, it's supposed to be very, very playable with this Flame Body Cannon attack. I always kill a Wattrel with its great flashing draw attack, Hop Snorlax, and Lily's Rebound B. So. Really cool to see the trainers Pokemon here, which does make me think that if you go to your local pre-release, you're probably getting more trainers Pokemon in your pre-built kit. So maybe with Hops Snorlax, maybe you're getting like a Hops Cramorant, which is, you know, very good in a pre-release format because you start at four prizes. But you know, it could even be something like the Doubles as well, give you some gust in there. The Ionis Kill a Wattrel.
Bag.
The inviting wink is hilarious.
Yeah, it's Erica's invitation on an evolution. You know, that's funny. The Lily's deck, it's, you know, Lily's Clefairy, which is pretty splashable in a lot of decks, but all the other cards are, like, very control-focused. You have the Pearl that gives one less prize when it's knocked out. You have this card, which is Erica's invitation. Like, is there some stall deck being built? Are you maybe going to end up playing against a, you know, control variant at a local pre-release? Hopefully not, but maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, just play like a Zatu engine with four pearls.
But what do you do? Like, what? Like, but how do you win? Like, that's the kind of
you just keep attacking with single prizes the whole game, run.
But how do you win?
You hit 200 for a single prizer every turn.
It's a 70 HP with two. Oh, with the Clefairy.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Zatu plus Clefairy.
It could be done. Could be done.
It'd be cooking.
The Hops Snorlax, again, are going to be a cool card in the Hops engine. A lot of people are excited to play this one, so make sure you head to your local card store, hit that pre-release, get a few packs, as well as, you know, get a cool Snorlax, maybe. I was going to watch it. I did not realize Flashing Draw was read the way that it did. I thought it was, like, Rev of Room, but specifically, you must discard a basic Lightning Energy from this Pokemon in order to use the ability. Actually, a little improvement. It makes it a little more Iono-proof if you can leave an energy on it. Of course, with Iono's Belly Bolt, you can... you can put as many lightning energy as you want, attach them to your Iono's Pokemon. So you know, being able to use the ability to attack to use Flashing Draw isn't that big of a deal. But yeah, so I think some good consistency that you could find in the pre-release if you're able to start chaining these. But of course, Enstarting Manitan and any pre-release like format where you don't have like Bench Barrier, we don't have a lot of ways to consistently fight your Pokemon. If you can somehow set up this Flame Body Cannon, and start swinging,
you know, it's going nuts.
I'm curious if they're going to include a reversal energy with this kit and let you really get explosive with early attacks. So, all
right, I have a prediction question for you guys.
Sure.
Today's March 10th, 2025. Yeah. On April 10th, 2025, will the card N have a reprint?
No.
I think not. It's because Iono exists.
I could see it. I could see it. The
card's interesting. Already there.
Why wouldn't, you know, why not, right?
If only, like, and it's really just like N is like so broken and so key to the game, but also deck being able to run like 4N and 4Iono would be kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Man, they can't run 4N and 4Iono forever, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I could see it like towards the end of like this format, them reprinting N.
Yeah, I think when.
Yeah, Iono does eventually rotate in like a
year, it'll rotate, right? This time next year, right?
You know,
you never know.
I don't think this early, but it's possible.
We're already one rotation away, but if we say with how things are currently, where like Iono is set to rotate, where Boss's Orders is set to rotate, where Professor's Research is set to rotate, there could be some really, really interesting supporter lineups.
Yeah.
If they do not reprint these cards immediately. So
doesn't something rotate at the same time?
Yep.
Yikes, dude.
Doesn't Morty's rotate as well?
No, it's from Temporal Forces. Professor Research really.
Yeah, when they reprinted it in Prismatic Evolutions, it still has a G block tag.
Yeah, well, good luck at your pre-releases this weekend. Yeah. I will be probably one at least.
Y'all, which pre-release promo are you going for?
I'm going for Kilowattrol, bro. Kilowattrol is not dead. Maridon is still here. We're playing Maridon with Iono's Belly Bowl and Kilowattrol. Yeah. We're going to go fast. We're going to draw some cards.
You can use Raichu so much.
This is what Maridon has been missing, is drawing cards every turn, and now we have it.
Right, it's just really just having the attackers to combo with it. Parker, which pro are you going for?
We can play Larry's skill with this deck.
I guess.
You discard your hand, you get whatever you need, then you draw,
six. All right. We're cooking. Parker, which pro are you going for?
Probably Snorlax, if I had to pick it.
Snorlax, that's a good one. You know, I didn't use a Rabombi in one of my Pokemon video game playthroughs, but this Darmanitan, too cool of a guy, too goofy looking, and too good attack. So I want to try at the end of Zoroark deck, get a little Fusion Strike action back, at least in my head, at least. So
it's funny because that like first attack is funny against like if you ever played against Cerulege or something.
Yeah, it's like let's just randomly farm Cerulege. 30 damage for each basic energy card in your opponent's discard pile. And with weakness, you're definitely like KOing Goldango as well if you actually attack the Darmanitan.
Yeah,
Goldango and they had even Maridon, right?
Yeah, if you get to that point, I guess.
Well, they don't need what? You're trying to hit two. You need 8 energy in the discard to K with Backdraft.
No, it's not a lot.
You know, Maridon.
Yeah. I mean, but you just can't one shot in that deck. So, like, all the energy stays on for at least a turn. And, like, you're just getting hazard.
True. Very true. All
right, y'all. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the Beach Court Podcast.
One last cliff note.
Yeah.
Next week, just teaser for everyone else that stayed through this episode for a very long time. Thank you for listening. Next week, we'll have Rahul Reddy on this episode talking about post-rotation, his experience in Japan, and kind of what it was like to play in Japan. So you're going to want to hear that interview as we start to prep towards the Journey Together set release and get ready for Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in to the latest episode of the Beach Court Podcast. If you enjoy what you listen to, please feel free to drop a subscribe or like below. Or honestly, tell a friend about it. We're always trying to grow. Word of mouth is a great way that we grow. If you're enjoying the pod, reach out to us on Twitter. Reach out to us personally. All of our link socials are in the bio of the audio you're listening to or in the description of the YouTube video. But anyways, we will be back next week with Rahul Reddy and more to get you geared up for post-rotation. Thanks, everyone.
See you.
See ya. Love him, Parker.
See ya.